Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Dellingpole. And I know I always say I'm excited about this week's special guest, but I really am looking forward to my conversation with Michelle Davis. I don't know whether you've noticed, but the gold price has been getting quite interesting recently. But it's not too late to get in. I think it's very important to have holdings in gold and silver. And there are two main ways of doing this. Either you have physical metal, either delivered to your doorstep or in a vault in Switzerland or London, in which case I recommend the Pure Gold Company, and you'll find the details below. But if you want to earn interest on your gold, so you don't pay the costs of storing your gold, for example, and you don't incur the risks of having to hide it at home, I recommend a company called Monetary Metals. Now, it's extraordinary that they've worked out a way of paying interest on gold, but they do it. They do it by lending out gold to the jewelry industry and similar industries, and they pay you your interest in the form of further gold. I've had the CEO, Keith Wiener, twice on my podcast, and I like the product. I use it myself. You can get 2 to 5% annually in interest, 2 to 5% interest, or even more if you go for their higher yield gold bond offerings, if you're an accredited investor. It's a way of opting out of fiat currency and retaking control of your money. So go to monetary-metals.com/Dellingpole. I'll put the details below this and open an accredited account. Michelle has treated both my brother, Dick, and myself for our various myriad problems. And she's a miracle worker. I mean, you know, she just does amazing things. But what I hadn't realized is that there's a really interesting backstory to Michelle's career and experiences with the regulatory system, which I think will strike a lot of chords with people who are cynical about the medical establishment and the Rockefeller medicine and stuff like that. So Michelle, welcome to the Delling Pod.
Thank you.
You're an osteopath. Now, I thought, well, you're not an osteopath.
No.
Okay. Sorry. You're not an osteopath. Okay. Let's get that clear. But osteopathy, I think if you asked 99 out of 100 people would tell you that osteopathy is about crunching bones. Everyone knows that, you know, I've got this great osteopath I recommend, and he's great, or she's great. You know, she'll really, I mean, it's terrifying, a lot of crunches, but sorted out my back, no problem. But what I've learned from you is that that's not what osteopathy originally was.
No.
The guy who founded it. Tell us about that.
No. So there are osteopaths that do the clicking,
yeah,
and the manipulation. And they do focus on the musculoskeletal system.
Which is great, so when they're good at it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they get really good results. Yeah. And some people, they enjoy that and they choose to have that approach. And then others practice in an entirely different way. So it's not the clicking at all. It's more fine adjustments.
Yeah.
And then also connecting with a higher energy. So connecting with the creator.
Right. Okay. So we're talking about God,
yes,
basically. Yeah. I mean, in my book, that is,
yeah,
God.
Yeah, God, yes.
Okay. So you were telling me that the guy who invented osteopathy, his way of thinking about the practice, craft, whatever you want to call it, art, was way different from what is understood now.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So osteopathy is a philosophy and an art and a science. And the founder of osteopathy was Andrew Taylor Still, and this was 1874. And back then, he was disgruntled with medicine. He was actually a doctor. And at the time, medicine really was not helping. And people were dying. Even members of his family were dying from spinal meningitis. And so because of him being disgruntled and upset, irritated by the restrictions of medicine in that day, he started to look at other ways of helping bodies to heal and saving lives. So he was treating diphtheria, TB.
Tuberculosis.
Pneumonia, chest infections, asthma, disease, basically dysentery. So people would come to him far and wide for treatment for illness.
Where did he pick up these techniques?
He, at the age of, I think, between 8 and 10, he actually created like a swing effect using a rope on a tree. He tied a rope to the tree, left it so far off the ground so that he could rest his head and his neck as a pillow on the rope, and started to swing. And at the time he had a headache, and he realized that when he was swinging, that the headache disappeared. And from that moment, he was intrigued about what he had just created, what he had just done, what had just happened. How did the headache disappear? And so that was his first interest when he was about 8 or 10 years old. Then he was a farmer, he was a doctor. So he was taught traditional methods of surgery and drugs, medicine at that time. But then he started to look at corpses, and then started to using his scalpel and actually looking at bodies, and using his knife to look at the structure, the anatomy. And he started to learn that way, by dissection.
He sounds like a maverick genius. So he's essentially an autodidact. He worked this system out for himself.
He did, yes.
That's amazing. And I'd never heard of him.
No. Andrew Taylor Still.
So he was American?
Yeah. American, yes. Yeah.
Was he sort of recognised for his... I mean, the fact that I haven't heard of him suggests he wasn't recognised.
That's deliberate, though, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so yeah. One thing that's puzzled me, I think a lot of people are aware that in the early 1900s, medicine was hijacked by the Rockefellers, and they bought up all the medical colleges, and they bought up everything, and they sold their Rockefeller medicine, which is essentially byproducts of the oil industry. And they erased, or did their best to erase, all the traditional methods that had been used before. But you're describing a period, so 1874, you said.
That's when osteopathy was named and adopted, yeah.
But so that implies that things weren't rosy even before Rockefeller medicine, that that the medical system was not good. What was wrong with it then?
It was killing more people than helping.
Okay. But if we are, those of us who are down the rabbit hole, if we are cursing the advent of Rockefeller and Carnegie medicine, when was the golden age of medicine that we're trying to get back to, or that osteopathy was, do you see what I'm saying?
I think osteopathy, though, from the beginning has always been a threat.
Yeah.
From the start, it's a threat to big pharma.
I get that. I'm just wondering. So even in the 1870s, medicine was actually pretty rubbish, and lots of people were dying in droves. Mm. But there must have been an undercurrent of sort of folk medicines or sort of mavericks like Andrew Stills.
Mm.
I'm just trying to put it in context.
Mm. We need to interview Julia Spivak. She's very knowledgeable in this area.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, we could maybe get her on.
Okay. Well, I'll do it. I'll just I don't. There's no point asking people for things that they don't know the answer to. I'm just in my mind it flits all over the place. So this guy devises this system, which is not just about crunching.
Not just about bones. No.
What else is it? What's it about?
It's about the entire system of the body. So, and how that relates to the environment and the universe. So it's spiritual, it's physical, it's mental, it's emotional, it's the entire aspect of that being. And that being is connection with God.
How on earth do you train to be good at that? I mean, is it a gift or is it, how do you pick up these skills?
So it is a 4-year degree training.
Yeah.
So I trained in 1994 in London, British School of Osteopathy, and it was a 4-year degree course, or 93, sorry. I graduated in 1997 as an osteopath. And we studied anatomy, physiology, pathology, obstetrics. We studied like medics would study. But from day one, it was hands-on. So we learned how to palpate the body. We learned how to feel tissue. We learned how things felt, really, how things moved, how things didn't move. And then the craniosacral approach, which is looking at this, what some would term as the Christ oil in the body.
Yeah.
This is the fluid that bathes the brain and the spinal cord and all of the nerves. This is taught in the second year of the 4-year training. And it is really, really difficult to palpate. Not at all easy. So for the entire training, it was really difficult for me to actually feel that rhythm. Whereas it's much easier to feel the movement of the hip joint or the elbow or the knee or the neck, the spine. And so it's very easy to just drop those techniques and not actually develop them any further than when you've graduated, because it's difficult. And it's much easier just to click something or stretch something or massage something.
And probably more profitable as well, because there's loads of people with bad backs and who needs more complicated things.
True. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I can vouch for that, that the very best, I mean, I've had, you know, because I'm a hypochondriac and also because I've got, you know, ongoing problems. I've seen any number of practitioners in different sort of woo fields, if you like, you know, outside of medicine.
Good.
And definitely the best ones were craniosacral. They,
yeah.
Because I suppose you get the very best because it's more, it requires more sensitivity. Mm-hmm. But also, this is just my view from my experience, craniosacral is the key. And it's weird. Tell me about what the theory, because I mean the limbic system and the lymphatic system and all that, what's that all about?
So, well, the craniosacral system is the cranial bones, it's the spinal cord, it's all of the nerves, it's the fluid that bathes the brain, the spinal cord, and all of the nerves, and it moves around the body at a rate of 8 to 10 times a minute. And it's a circulatory system like the pulse. So most people can feel the pulse at the wrist or at the neck. But we're able to feel this pulse within the body, and that is the nervous system. And we're able to, once you can feel it, palpate it, we're able then to read the body, read the system, and then help the body make its own adjustments to create a balanced state. Because we're able to feel the amplitude of movement, the range of movement, we're able to feel blockages within it. And so when people like myself put our hands on someone's cranium to actually feel that rhythm, which is the easiest place to feel it,
yeah.
You can actually feel it anywhere in the body, we're able to read the body and tell the patient lots of things about them, and they haven't told us any of those things. Because we can read the energy within the system. So we're reading the nervous system of the body, and then we're able to adjust that, but we're only adjusting it with the help of the body. Nothing is against the body. It's always working with it, and the body finds its own neutral or its own balanced position, but you're just aiding that to happen, and then it releases.
So what sort of things is it telling you? I mean, can you read about a body from those?
So I can tell whether someone's depressed, whether they're angry, whether they are chronically fatigued, whether there's deficiency in the system. I can tell if they're perhaps not sleeping very well. I can tell how much pain they're in.
Wow.
You can tell a lot, really. Yeah.
You don't get, when you go and see your GP, your GP hasn't the bloody clue, has he? He's just thinking, right, let me prescribe this. Right, next. Right. I mean, because I think we live in such a sort of materialist, farmer-dominated culture that I think some people, even people who've you know, become skeptical of the world during the COVID pandemic, fake nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Even some of them will be listening to you and going, yeah, she's aware of the fairies, you know, like, there's no way that you can just touch somebody's head. I mean, it's like something out of a, I don't know, Avatar or something, you know, one of those kind of, but I believe it because I've seen it, and you've had amazing success with some, I mean, tell me about some of your success stories, because like your weirdest ones and your, you know, like.
Well, people travel all over to see me for the approach that I use. So I have patients from Dorset, Devon, London, Manchester, Kent, and I'm based in Worcester. So they'll travel a long way because my average number of appointments is between 2 and 3 to make a difference. So people are willing to try something that maybe to them might seem a little bit crazy from other people's perception of it. So they think it's worth it. But the most significant is when I'm working with someone who is suicidal, because I think that's potentially the worst place you could possibly be. And you wouldn't think to see someone who practices osteopathy if you were suicidal, but they would be the most significant cases I've seen, or the people that would be self-harming and suicide.
How do they discover you?
Usually it's word of mouth. I would say it's recommendation. Somebody has had treatment already because they've been suicidal.
Right.
Or they've suffered with such anxiety. And then that's how they find someone like myself.
So you'll find the root cause of their suicidal urges.
Yes.
Which are what?
So quite often it's a retained trauma. It's an injury, but it also can be, so it's emotional trauma or physical trauma that has actually then just got stuck within the system, and it's holding that part of the body so restricted and tight that it ends up being a constant discomfort, a constant tension, which they're never free of. And it's just so overwhelming, and it just overrides everything, every decision that they make, because that is driving their decision making because of how they're feeling within their body. They can't switch off. And so I look for that restriction. I'm looking for something that's been there for a long time, and then I find it and then able to release it.
But I can understand you feeling a restriction.
Mm.
But then how do you trace it back to the origin of, I mean, how do you work?
Because, again, of being able to read the system, I'm able to feel if someone, for example, has been concussed.
Right.
So if they've had a head injury,
well, that would be me,
or a whiplash.
Horses.
So, yes, horses, definitely.
I've had loads of that. Yeah. Okay.
Because it impacts the dynamics of the fluid around the brain.
Yeah.
And the brain has its own lymphatic system. So you've got the lymphatic system in the body, but then you've got the glymphatic system in the brain.
Oh, right.
It's separate. And so what we work with when we're using the craniosacral approach is we're actually aiding the glymphatic system. So we're aiding the brain to detox. So you often find with something like someone who is potentially suicidal or has got severe anxiety or depression, that the tissue around the brain is stagnant. It feels like it's stagnant. It's not flowing.
Right.
So it feels very heavy. It's very dense. It's dark. It's got this horrible feeling about it. And sometimes makes me feel like I want to take my hands off, because it's not a very pleasant sensation to feel it. But we stick with it, obviously, to then enable it to release and to flow. And then it restores. So you get balance, you get the harmony, and the fluid just flows again. And then the person feels it. They often feel it when they're on the way home. Sometimes it's an emotional release after the treatment, because it's just so overwhelming with the feelings that they get after because of the release. And then the brain detoxes. So you haven't got the brain sitting in toxicity anymore. And then they feel a lot better.
That must be really nice, sort of taking people away from the brink of the suicide.
Yes.
Really nice.
Yeah. I get as much from working with the patients as they get from me helping them. Yeah. Like for the feelings that I get from it, it's just incredible. Yeah, the work that I do, I absolutely love it.
Well, it must be a gift. I can't imagine if everyone who's been to osteopathy training can do this, do this kind of stuff.
I think the gift comes from learning the cranial sacral technique and having a connection with higher, so God, the creator.
Yeah.
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 I think that's where it comes from. So I think you're connected.
Were you always a Christian?
Yes, I was raised Catholic. So I've been baptized, raised in the Catholic Church, raised through Catholic secondary school.
Yeah.
Yes, a churchgoer for many, many years.
But did you actually believe in God all the time?
Yes, I've always believed in God.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, always.
Yeah, it's my favorite one-liner from the Bible, physician, heal thyself.
Yes.
Which I think contains so many clues as to the nature of our,
yeah,
our immune system and stuff.
I'm just a facilitator. Yeah. That's it. I'm a facilitator between the person's body which has been traumatized or injured, emotionally or physically, and God.
Yeah.
And it's like an interface between. Yeah.
Do you think we're getting into the unseen realm now, but do you think apart from God, do you think angels get involved at all or anything like that? Do you?
My auntie works a lot with angels.
Yeah.
And I do sometimes, I do regularly attend an angel meditation because my auntie runs that.
Yeah.
And she's Catholic. She was raised Catholic.
Right.
So she's Irish. But myself, I wouldn't say that I work with angels, no.
No, just an idea.
And I don't really have any connection with angels myself.
Right.
But I just keep an open mind because, I trust implicitly my auntie and the angel meditation groups that I go to, because I know from where she's coming from and it feels good.
Right.
Yeah.
What is your, just as a brief sidetrack, what do angel meditation classes involve?
It's just like a meditation, really, yeah, but and setting intentions. So it's like going on a journey. So really, it's a meditation.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
But do you call on the power of angels to do cool stuff? I mean,
I don't know.
Because apparently,
my auntie does.
You see, this is the thing. Yes. I've heard, like, we're all trying to find our way through this yeah, realm and the unseen realm.
Yeah.
And apparently, I gather, we've all got angels.
Yes.
That look after us. I know this is, it tends to be more sort of Catholic thing than a Protestant thing. I think Protestants are a bit more sceptical about this. But anyway, I've heard this. I don't know. It would be nice to think, wouldn't it, that we've got guardian angels looking at this and thinking, yeah, finally a bit of appreciation for the stuff I do all the time.
I think well, we do all have angels, don't we? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. We've been protected all the time.
Yeah, I think I've been protected hunting the odd time.
Yeah.
Okay, suicides. What else? What are the other sort of major things that you've
so if we say suicide, depression, anxiety, that's in one area then.
That's a lifetime's work already.
Then I suppose it would be treating the babies. So I treat from 2 days old, and I will help the fractious baby, or the baby that's not sleeping, the baby that's not digesting properly, the baby that's not being able to latch onto mum's breast to feed. That's the other area, I would say.
Yeah.
Is really, really significant because it changes everything for the entire family. If you can improve the child's health, then obviously the parents are benefiting from that as well, because there's nothing worse than and a baby that's crying for hours on end and you're unable to settle them as a parent. I mean, it's really distressing, upsetting. You're already exhausted, but then also you're not able to connect very well with your baby either if they're crying so much.
Yeah. So, but don't all babies cry a lot? I mean, isn't that?
Yes, and it's normal for a baby to cry, but not for a baby to cry more than they are awake and happy. So That's the issue.
Is it because their head's been sort of squashed when they came out or something?
Usually it's birth trauma. So it's their passage on the way out, whether they've been born too fast, too slow, or by cesarean.
So, really?
There is a reason.
Is cesarean? I would have thought cesarean would make it easier because they.
No, the problem then with cesarean is that the baby is meant to go through the birth canal.
Ah.
And so when they go through the birth canal, their neck and shoulders will turn one way, and then their pelvis will turn the opposite way, and then they do the opposite movement. So they twist themselves as they go through the canal.
Oh.
And then they can release the in utero position that they were in for a number of weeks. So sometimes when the baby comes out, they still feel like they're inside. So their body is feeling like in a banana shape. Or their head might be positioned one way and their pelvis is the other, and they actually haven't been able to release it themselves because of potentially...
That is so interesting. So we are meant... you'll get obstetricians, you know, the more cynical ones who say things like, yeah, if I could have my way, everyone would have a cesarean. It's so much easier. You've heard them say that.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, well, they must know they're a doctor. Well, that's what I used to think back in the day. But you're right, we're meant to do things naturally. And there's that process through the birth canal. Yeah, it makes total sense to me.
Also, the fluids, we need to go through the birth canal really to get all the bacteria from the fluids of the womb and the vagina. We need to be covered in that as we come out.
Right.
Because it sets up our microbiome in the gut.
So
for our immune system.
Everything we're doing. Today is wrong, isn't it? It's just like we think we're so big and clever, or rather we're told we're so big and clever by the propaganda machine.
A lot of the time it's life-saving, isn't it? It's like the mother doesn't have a choice but to, if they want to deliver a healthy baby, then sometimes it's that way that it's a must, they just have to have a cesarean. So
Yeah, sure. It's the elective cesareans. I'm not, you know, it's the, anyway, yeah. People don't know. People are brainwashed. I mean, one can't really blame them for their bad decisions when they're based on misleading information.
Absolutely. And someone like me has been silenced. So, you know, I'm not able to speak to the public anyway about these things because we have a certain... we're allowed to say certain things and not say certain things. And so people then end up not being able to make an informed choice about anything because they're not able to listen.
No.
They're not able to hear. So,
this is what I want to find out about. You've fallen foul of the system to the point where you can't call yourself an osteopath.
No.
But thank goodness you're still able to treat people, just not calling yourself an osteopath. But tell me, so how did it all happen? Where did it all go wrong? tell Uncle James what.
It's confession time.
It's a good story because what I like about it is this has been repeated with Dr. David Cartlin right now, who's been ostracized from the medical system. I mean, lots of people in different medical fields. If you don't toe the big pharma line, you are toast.
You're definitely toast.
So what happened with you?
So in 2016, goes back that far.
That's a long time.
2016, everything changed. So I graduated in 97, loving osteopathy. Loving my career, loving my clinic, my practice. I'd chosen to be an osteopath at the age of 13. So everything was fantastic. And then 2016, I received a letter. And the letter said, this was from the regulator, we have received a complaint about your advertising. They didn't say who was the complainant. They said, we've received a complaint about your advertising. And you're unable to advertise what you're advertising on your website. If you do not remove the advertising, we're threatening you with suspension. So there'll be a fitness to practice case brought against you. That was 2016. They censored all of the testimonials on my website. There were 75 of them. So all of them were censored in order to fit the criteria that allowed me to have a list of complaints that I could treat, which were the typical things like back pain, tendonitis, headache, lumbago, sciatica, those sorts of things. They gave me a list of about 13.
You were allowed to advertise that, yes, you treat those?
Yes.
Right,
I only allowed to say I could treat the list of, let's say, 13. And by the way, that list is actually created by a chiropractor. And osteopaths are not chiropractors, so that's all very confusing as well, because we are not chiropractors. So I was forced to comply or take the risk of losing my title, osteopath.
So just step back. So you'd had loads of personal testimonies from your patients.
Yes.
That you didn't make up, like on reviews on Amazon or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they'd all had a range of amazing healing experiences.
Yes.
So you're putting them on, and some busybody, I suspect, probably from the organisation, yes, rather than a member of the public. I can't exactly imagine members of the public going,
yeah,
oh, hang on a second, she's advertising things that no one would do that.
No.
Okay, so it's a professional body, which, yes, is called what again?
The General Osteopathic Council.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
So they said you had to remove all these testimonials from your website.
Yeah.
Or face
suspension.
Okay.
So ultimately,
what I imagine you said, yeah, okay, I'll take them all off.
Yeah, I did. In 2016, I lacked courage.
Oh, did you? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
oh.
No, I didn't have the strength. I was in love with osteopathy and the word osteopath, my title. I'd been to university in London for 4 years to study. You know, it cost a lot of money to my parents for this degree.
Yeah.
And it was a huge dilemma. I mean, it wasn't easy to decide what to do. And I remember asking a lot of people, what should I do? What can I do? It didn't feel right. It felt wrong. I knew what I was doing was wrong. But I thought that maybe I could help more people if I just reduced my list.
Yeah.
But it reduced my scope of practice. And that's what hurt, because then I felt like I couldn't reach the people to help them that I knew that I could help. But then I couldn't reach them anymore because I couldn't advertise that I could help those people with those complaints, because the testimonials did the work for me.
Yeah.
So I removed them in 2016. And I was disgruntled with that.
Yeah.
Then COVID happened. So just fast forward. There was no complaint against me after that because I complied. I was a good girl and, you know, I complied. So they left me alone. That was okay. But I was never satisfied with that. I was really unhappy in a way. I felt like I got duct tape across my lips. I couldn't, yeah, speak freely. I was really afraid of saying things in my treatment room, on the phone calls as well, that patients would ring to make inquiries. I was very careful what I said because of the fear, again, that I would be stepping out of line and I would be suspended. Yeah. So it was not good. Then COVID happened and everything changed. I woke up big time, and I found a huge determination, strength, courage, fellowship, a connection with God. And I decided to take action against the regulator. Mm-hmm. So in 2021, I created a commercial lien, an affidavit. So an affidavit of truth, declaration of facts. And I sent 4 notices to the regulator. This was May 2021 through to about June, July 21. And I created it myself, self-taught, really. And I served these documents on 3 members of the regulator that were there at the time of 2016. And I listed, I suppose, the torts against me since 2016.
Right.
And that it was discrimination against me. And they retaliated with a suspension against me. So they, first of all, they didn't investigate my claims. They just said that I was mentally unfit, mentally unstable, because the documents that I had served upon them didn't make sense. They couldn't comprehend them. They chose to not comprehend them. So they then said, we actually think you're mentally unstable. We're concerned about your patient's safety. Yeah. and we're going to put you through a fitness to practice case. So everything that I had avoided in 2016, I was now facing in 2021. And so the first hearing would have been around October time, October 21. I've attended three hearings. One of them was in London, the other two were virtual. And the result of it is that they demanded my medical history, my medical notes.
What, see whether you were mad?
See if I was mad.
Right, okay, yeah.
Then they demanded that I undergo psychiatric assessment.
At your own expense?
No, possibly theirs, but would you trust the regulator's psychiatrist?
No way.
No, don't think so.
No.
Nor do I. So I declined. Yeah, I declined for many reasons, which I will go into when I'm at the hearing. I've created a 50-page document. My hearing's coming up in April 3rd, 4th, 5th. So there will be a lot of details that I will reveal then. But the long and short of it is that I declined to undergo the psychiatric assessment and the medical notes. And so they suspended me. They gave me an interim suspension order on October the 1st, 2021. And the final hearing was meant to be by the 27th of December, 2021, because I'd already attended three hearings. And the final hearing was meant to be 6 weeks later. I'm still waiting for that. And that final hearing is... This is next month.
So the process is probably part of the punishment.
Massively. Yeah.
And
yes.
What does it mean for you when they suspend you?
They say that the public are unsafe.
Right.
So they can't. They would say that the public are unsafe. So therefore, they take away my title, and I cannot use the title osteopath anymore, whilst they investigate. But they've been investigating for 2.5 years. In that time of investigation, they actually prosecuted me. So they took me to court. They took me to Kidderminster Magistrates Court. And they prosecuted me for impersonation of an osteopath.
Right.
Yeah. Now.
Or did you wear an osteopath's hat or something? Osteopath's moustache. That's very dodgy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because on my website, I had changed the content of the website, and I had actually said, Michelle Davis is no longer registered with the General Osteopathic Council. She is not using the title osteopath anymore. So I made it really clear.
Yeah.
But my domain name was still osteopath. So my email still had the word osteopath in it.
Yeah.
That was the main problem, which actually was an oversight.
Yeah.
Wasn't deliberate, because actually I have 100% full integrity. And since October the 1st, 2021, every single patient that either makes an inquiry or comes to my practice receives a document of integrity from me. And everything is detailed about what's happened. So everyone knows that I'm not using the title osteopath.
Okay. So
I practice osteopathy.
Has this affected your business?
Yes.
It has.
It has, yeah. I'm not able to write receipts for patients. So I lost patients at that time.
For their claims.
Yeah, they would need the title osteopath for me to be able to write a receipt. And so I can't get referrals from doctors or surgeons. And so some patients that love coming and I love treating them, they could no longer attend my practice anymore. And then there's the headlines in the press of me being a fraud osteopath off the back
in the
of
press.
The... Yeah, off the back of the criminal conviction of impersonating an osteopath. So you don't know what effect that is having on the public that are in your vicinity and how they feel about that. Because they would think, did she ever train as an osteopath? Was she ever an osteopath? You know, they would start to question that, wouldn't they?
Let me guess, you're not the only really good osteopath, ex-osteopath, who's suffered from the system.
There's thousands.
Really?
Yeah.
So basically all the really good ones have been kicked out.
Absolutely. Yes, because we're a threat. And so this would be like the post office scandal. You know, if there is a remedy process, there is a corruption remedy process, which I'm part of, But people need to see, they need to have confidence in that, I think, to be able to come forwards. But it would be like the post office scandal.
This is quite a normie question, but what would be the interests of the what's it called, the Council of Osteopathic...
General Osteopathic Council.
Sorry, the yeah. General Osteopathic Council. People would come into this podcast would be going, yeah, but the General Osteopathic Council is there to make to protect the public and make sure that everyone's got the proper training. What would be their interest in getting rid of talented practitioners? Why would they narrow down the field to bone crunching? How does it work? What is the...
Because they're controlled. They're a market fraud agent for Big Pharma. Because we're a threat to the pharmaceutical industry. Because we help people get better.
Yeah.
If people knew the truth, they would be queuing down the road like they did with Andrew Taylor Steele. There would be queues waiting for treatment. But the public don't know how good we are and what we achieve with the work that we do deliberately because of the threat to the medicines. We don't prescribe medicines. So we use the natural, innate ability of the body to heal itself.
Yeah.
There's no money in that.
No. So, I can see that. It makes sense to me, but I can see a lot of people have been so brainwashed to think that, you know, their doctor knows best and you know, you take the pills and they work. And it would never occur to them that a regulatory body would actually be working in cahoots with the pharmaceutical industry to suppress medical techniques that actually work and that heal people.
Yeah.
It's beyond most people's realm of understanding.
Yes, and again, it's deliberate, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot harder to take responsibility for your health than it is just to take a tablet. It's so much easier to take a tablet for your symptom and then take another tablet for that side effect of the first symptom. Then you have another symptom, you take another tablet for it. But it's easier. It's easier to take tablets than take that personal responsibility and take action to actually allow your body to find the root cause of the symptom and then actually get it treated. You know, make changes in your life.
Yeah. Actually, that's never fun, is it? I mean, it's never fun.
It's hard work.
Changing a diet.
No.
Horrible.
Going to bed early.
Like giving up cakes.
Yeah, giving up sugar,
giving up caffeine, doing
fasting.
Well, yeah, so you should know, dear viewers and listeners, that I'm in the middle. I'm 36 hours into a 72-hour fast, and I'm not enjoying it. It's horrible. It's just like it's not fun. But again, you get the results, don't you?
You will get results.
Autophagy, apoptosis.
Stem cells.
Yeah, exactly.
Stem cells, I think, at day three.
Exactly, it is the day three, which is why you've got to go through the 3 days. So what, you've presumably had contact with lots of people who've experienced similar problems to you.
Yes. And I'm sure they've just been afraid to step forwards. There was a debate in Parliament in the year 2000 because in 200 different constituencies, there was uproar because of the regulator. The regulator got rid of probably, several hundred osteopaths at that time in the year 2000.
Was there a moment when this happened, when it changed? Was it previously all rosy and then suddenly it got taken over, or what?
So I would say when the restriction of advertising, that was 2016, was a big problem for a lot of osteopaths. But I would say in the year 2000, the General Osteopathic Council came into force in, I think it was 1998. So when I first graduated, it wasn't the General Osteopathic Council. It was the General Register of Osteopaths. And then the year later, it was the General Osteopathic Council. And so they made it really difficult to be registered with them. You had to comply. And then a lot of the traditional osteopaths who had been practicing for, you know, a good 20, 30 years, who were excellent, you know, they were healing lots and lots of people. They didn't join the register because the regulator made it so difficult for them to join. So we lost maybe even thousands at that point. I mean, the number of osteopaths on the register has hardly grown since then.
Yeah.
because they keep finding ways to suspend or to get rid of. And most, it's much easier if I'd resigned by now. I've been going through this for 2.5 years, and it is a battle. I am on the battlefield with the regulator, and I have lost confidence so many times and wanted to step back because it's not a comfortable position to be in. And every single day I have to explain myself to patients.
Do you?
I have to tell them I'm suspended.
That's a bit tedious.
Yeah, it's very tedious, and it's hurtful, isn't it? So
yeah,
so every day for 2.5 years I face that, and it's so much easier to resign, but I will not resign. I will hold them accountable.
What's the worst they can do at this point?
Abolish me, suspend me.
But
even though I've been suspended for 2.5 years,
well, it's
only an interim suspension.
But you can go on
suspension.
You can go on doing what you're doing. There's nobody can stop you doing that. Well, that's good.
Because the patients choose to see me, regardless of what my title is, they're coming for the from the recommendations and what they've read maybe online.
It's a real shame, isn't it? I hope, obviously, that this brings you lots of work, although maybe you don't need too much work. Yeah, but do you want lots more work?
Depends.
Yeah. But I'm thinking of all the people around the country in your position, all the good osteopaths that aren't called osteopaths anymore. It would be wonderful, wouldn't it, if one could find a kind of put together a register so that they could get people could look them up and get
there's a group
somebody should do
the osteomyologists.
Oh yeah,
there's a big group of those, and they're the ones that are disgruntled with the regulator, so they set their own register up.
Oh, did they? So could you join that? Could you join that one?
Yeah, that was in. I could do. Yes.
I mean, apart from the else, not as a service, just as a service to you, but also to people who need treatment and want somebody who can do all the bells and whistles that you can do, all the magical stuff, because it's what you want, isn't it?
At some point, this regulator won't be regulating.
Come on, you ain't gonna win this one. I mean, you're doing it for the principle.
I'm in the battle.
You're in the. I'm really happy.
I'm still in the battle. Because I believe that there can be change. I believe there can be reform.
I don't know. I've read Revelation, and I'm not really sure that we're going to get roses and there's some fairly heavy shit we've got to go through before it all turns out right. And I'm not sure that
we don't know how long that is, though, do we?
I think it's 3.5 years, isn't it? I think the really bad bit. There's going to be some vibe. No. I meant the length of the tribulation. We're going to get Bible scholars telling me, no, you got it wrong. It's actually X amount of time. But yeah, I'm fairly. Tell me, is there anything else you want to say about that? But do you want people to turn up at your hearing or?
Yes.
Oh, please. You do? Oh,
yes,
oh good.
Do.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
great.
Inviting all of the public to my hearing. It's the 3rd, 4th, 5th of April. And as many of you that can attend, the better.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yes, it'll be a lot of fun.
Where is it?
Because
where
I've
is
got
it?
Some very exciting things to say
okay.
to the regulator.
I'll bet you're going to stick it to the...
Okay. I've been working on my case for 2.5 years.
Oh, okay. Right. That's good.
As many as you...
Where do they go for this experience?
They have to... The experience, yeah. The adventure. Yeah. They have to call the regulator the day before the hearing. There's a number that they have to dial.
Okay.
They have to register their interest
before. I'll put this in the bottom.
Yes,
the
thank you. Yes,
You haven't got the number to hand.
The more. No, I haven't actually.
Okay, so below this podcast, you'll see the info. Okay. And so they can sit in the public gallery.
So it's all online.
Oh, it's online. Oh,
yes.
Yeah,
it's online.
Right.
It's like a tribunal hearing. Yeah, so the regulator will be there with a barrister, legal advisor, a couple of lay people, an osteopath, the chairman. But it's a committee hearing.
Okay.
It's a professional conduct committee hearing, but it's a public hearing. So therefore the public should be there because, everyone needs to hear the truth.
I think some people will be really interested in checking this out. Cause I think apart from the else, I think they'd quite curious as to who these people are, what they're like, what their behavior is like, you know, Because I don't think anyone's going to be sympathetic to them for closing down people who are good at stopping people with suicide.
There are the osteopaths, though, that love the regulator, of course.
Oh, of course. You love Big Brother.
Yes.
It's what happens to Winston. He learns to love Big Brother.
Yeah.
I hope you get lots of people watching it. What's the weirdest case you've treated that you've
the weirdest?
Well, I don't know. Well, your favorite story. I'm putting on the spot now. I mean, just anyone, give me one.
I can't think of one now.
What about the twin that had died in the person who you discovered was their twin had died or something, and they'd got trauma from that?
No, I don't remember that. Sorry, no.
Oh, well, maybe I thought I was reading all these case studies on all those papers I read of yours. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yes,
doesn't matter.
Yeah, it would be one of those, perhaps. But I can't. That doesn't actually spring to mind.
Oh, okay. I want to know about Christ oil.
Yes.
That's the name for the...
Yeah, the movement of the cerebrospinal fluid. So it's the chrism. So they say that the Bible story is within the body. That is the Christ oil running through your body, round your brain, down your spinal cord and all of your nerves. So when we're working with that, we're working with Christ.
Yeah, there's a strain in this, people call themselves Christians who say that, yeah, it's all within us, God is within us and blah, 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 which I sort of get that that's part of it. You know, I mean, I get the Christ oil thing, but I wouldn't say that's the essence of Christianity, if you know what I mean.
No. I wouldn't either. No. But I think for us just to appreciate that God is within us, we are the creator is us. And so if we honor that, if we honor our body, treat our body as a temple, and we do what we can for that fluid to flow at the rate and rhythm that it should be flowing, then that's honoring God. It's honoring our creator.
So the morning fag that I'm about to have after we've done this podcast, that's...
The face says it all.
But the thing is, you know, I think I'm pretty good. Look, I'm
doing a fast. It's very goodness, good. The fast, goodness yeah, day. The fast is really good.
And I've managed to ship you over to my house to give me some extra treatment as well. So thanks, Michelle. I'm going to break client confidentiality here by you seem to have cured Dick of his asthma.
Yeah, in one visit. This is what Dick says. Yeah. He says one treatment. He came into my clinic room with asthma because of his wheeze, and he was using inhalers. And he says that he walked out of my treatment room, and he's not used the inhalers since. His wheeze stopped.
He was so ill there for a few days.
He was ill after the treatment, to be expected. Reaction. Yeah, that was a cleansing response.
Yeah.
And I did warn him, actually. And then it did actually happen.
Yeah.
But it was worth it.
I was quite disappointed, I have to say, that I did not get the extreme, I wasn't ill for 3 days like Dick was. We're very competitive, Dick and I. And if Dick wants, it's like...
Today will be the day.
Well, no, I don't want that.
But
I think actually if he watches this, he's a bit busy right now. Since he doesn't watch as many of my podcasts as he should. Mm. But if he probably will watch this, and I would like you to know, Dick, that I am doing a three day fast, which you are too much of a lightweight to do. And actually, now I've told you this, you'll probably do it, but that means you've got 3 days ahead of you of misery, whereas I'm already halfway through. So ha ha ha, Dick.
Hi, Dick.
He will be watching this. Of course he's going to be watching. Is there anything else that we haven't covered?
Yes, I published a book.
tell us about your book.
I published a book. Yeah, I titled it Miracle Worker because that's what patients say that happens when they come for treatment. So I use that as a title. And then the subtitle was Enlightened Rebel Osteopath. Brings gifts for a happier lifestyle, something along those lines. Because at the point when I published the book, I was actually an osteopath. I was able to use the title osteopath. And it contains all of the testimonials that were removed from my website. So every single one of them that was censored, I published them.
That's good. Why don't you call yourself something that I can change one letter, like an osteopath? Because it'll look the same on the type on the
that's true. The letter heading. Maybe take one letter and then put a different
osteopath. Osteopath. Osteopath.
Yeah, they would allow that. Yeah, they give you a list of what you're not allowed to say.
This piece of piston, isn't it? Osteopath. Osteopath. Yeah, no one's going to notice. Good. So, I'll put details about where people can buy your book below as well.
That'll be helpful. It's a self-help book. So it's to help people that can't come to me because they live too far away or they're in another country. But I wanted to try and reach as many people as I could with the truth about osteopathy and the truth about medicine and the truth about the body, the mind, the spirit, the soul. And it contains a lot of self-help. So if you read the book, you could manage your pain, your discomfort, your symptoms better. Yeah.
I bought this book when I had about a back trouble. This book by this man called Kano, who called something like Heal Your Own Back. And he claimed that back pain was all in the mind. And I'm not sure that it was, because it didn't work for me. Mm. I don't think it is all in the mind, is it?
They say that that 90% of a problem can be in the mind, but as low as 10%.
Oh, okay.
It's a high range. Yeah. But the mind always plays a role in it.
I've got to ask you, because I suddenly realised, have you experienced any kind of divine intervention or any sort of miraculous things that have happened to you?
Every day.
Oh, really?
Yes, because of the miracles that happen in the treatment room. If that's what you mean.
Yeah, I guess I do. Yeah,
because it's with most patients, it's miraculous because of the healing that happens.
Yeah.
The change that I feel in my hands is just, it's incredible. It's very difficult to comprehend it. And that's because we're not meant to, I suppose, comprehend it, because it's that divinity, isn't it? But it's with every patient, because I would say that 98 out of 100 patients are going to get better from whatever they've come with. And that is just amazing. It's miraculous. So I witness miracles all the time.
I think this is another of the I always say that Christianity is the deepest rabbit hole. but there is this theory, isn't there? That, you know, Christ taught his disciples, gave them the gift of healing.
Mm.
But there is this thing that we can potentially do.
Mm.
You've got it.
Yeah. Everyone has the capability to heal, because we are all creators. We're all part of the creator. We're here because of the creator.
Yeah.
And so we can all heal. But it's, where do you dedicate your time? I just chose to dedicate my time into the human body and the psyche.
I think we're going to need, when it all kicks off, which I think is going to be quite soon, people like you are going to be in demand.
Mm. We're in demand now.
I bet, yeah.
But can you imagine if people knew the truth, though?
Have you had any success healing the backs injured?
So most of my patients have had the vaccine. Oh, I'm not sure I would use the word vaccine, actually. Let's say jab.
The death jab, I think.
Yeah, let's say the
correct
jab.
Term.
So most of the patients have had the jab. So what's very difficult now is the symptoms that the patients come with. They present differently. And the symptoms aren't, they don't, it's not like a collection of symptoms that patients would have had in the past and you could totally understand it. Now it's very confusing and you don't really get that pattern. So sometimes it just doesn't make sense. But because we're never really working with just the symptoms, we're working with the entire system of the body, it doesn't really matter. because we just enable healing within the system. So still, people get better.
Do they?
Yes.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. Because we're just restoring the body back to health. So I think it's made a huge difference with the people that I'm treating who have had the jab. I think they're in a much better position having had treatment than if they hadn't had treatment. Because I'm not seeing the numbers of cases that other people are seeing or reporting to me about all the things that we're hearing. You know, like just the sudden deaths.
Turbo cancers, the cancers, strokes.
Hemorrhages.
Hemorrhages.
Yeah, infertility. That sort of thing.
Have you been able to help with fertility? Because that's a...
That's not really an area that I work in, and I haven't actually been asked to do that.
Right.
And also not with somebody who's had the jab.
Yeah.
So I haven't been presented with that. But it's just that I don't, I think that the people that have had the treatment, I think they've responded, their bodies are just better, in a better state of health for having the treatment than not having it. And able to cope better, I think, with the jabs that they've had.
That's good to hear, because I read on the internet that somebody, a craniosacral osteopath, whatever, had been treating or trying to treat vaccine injured people, and had found that it was all really bad and sludgy, like it was almost impossible to treat.
It's how it feels with a head injury case or a suicidal. So someone who's maybe suicidal or depressed or highly anxious, it's a similar feeling probably to that.
Right.
And it's just because the brain is just overload of toxin. And then the system is overload with toxin. So it just feels very dense. But if you restore movement, rhythm, then the body heals. And that's what's amazing when you're working with the body. Because I feel it every day. It's just incredible that we have got that self-healing capability, but only if you help it. It doesn't go away or get better if you don't actually make the decision to do something about it.
No. I'm glad that you're having success, because it's so depressing, isn't it? It's what they've done to us.
What they're doing to us.
But it all ends well. So there we are.
It all ends well.
So Michelle, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Is there anything else you want to? I'll put your details below. And
yes, thank you.
And yeah, come and watch Michelle's.
Yeah,
hearing.
Please come and watch the hearing.
That's great. Okay. If you enjoy this podcast, as I'm sure you have, if you want early access to my stuff, don't forget, support me on. Become one of my supporters on Patreon, on Locals, Substack, or Subscribestar. I quite like Substack, isn't it? It's kind of my favourite. Or if you don't want early access, you just want to buy me a coffee, random coffee, you can do that. Buy me a coffee, that's nice. You can obviously watch my stuff for free eventually, but you want to support me, don't you? I think. Yeah, you do. And don't forget to support my sponsors as well. They're great. We love them. They help me, so you should help them. Thank you again, Michelle.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.